As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
Well, the sun is rising over Missouri, folks, and it's time once again for a show-me showdown. We got breakfast on the table all across America. Coffee brewing on the stove, and there's a revolution in the air. Be a part of it. Welcome to our Monday, November the 2nd, 2009, live, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local. Coming to you Monday through Friday here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com. My name is, of course, William Roberts. I've got good news, hard facts, and workable solutions for you today. Be very short on the news. I'm not going to do any news today. But if you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness, you're definitely in the right place at the right time to become vocal local. This is the home of philosophical radicalism, where freedom is popular. It remains the best hope for America. Interactive Talk Radio is the name of the game, and to be a part of today's broadcast, you can pick up the phone and call throughout the broadcast for those with unlimited long-distance access or in the Austin, Texas area. You may call in at 512-904-8014 to join me live on air and from around America and around the world. You can call in toll-free at 866-841-1065. And of course, your calls are welcome. And you may also send your ideas for guests, show topics, and news to me via email. That email address is bvlhost@centurytel.net. bvlhost@centurytel.net. And for those without internet access, listening via any of our affiliate stations and micro broadcasters, you too can be a part of it. Simply send your letters to me at William Roberts Post Office Box 96, out of Exeter, Missouri, small town America, 65647. Again, that's P.O. Box 96, Exeter, Mo, 65647. Big shout out again this morning to Liberty Radio out of Owensville, Missouri, Micro 1650 AM, Buffalo, New York, and of course, 94.3 Elgin, Texas. Thank you, gentlemen, for broadcasting Become Vocal Local to your local listening audiences. Always like to hear from the micros. If there's anybody else out there carrying this broadcast, certainly let me know. I'll include you in our daily shout-out. The listener call-in number remains 866-841-1065. Of course, as always, your calls are welcome. The precious metals, crude oil, and currencies begin the week higher following the stock market plunge on Friday. We'll talk about that. Market manipulation wearing thin investors' patience. We'll see about that. Perhaps we can play some clips. The human ecology will be the main focus of the day. Economics 101, the distribution of the factors of production. All of that, of course, and much, much more. Let's go to the market reports for Monday, November the 2nd, 2009, active trading out of New York City. As of 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time, this off the Kitco website and other sources, gold was trading up $9.40 at $1,054.10 an ounce. Silver was up 14 cents as well at $16.46. Platinum moved up $7 in early trading at $1,331 an ounce, and palladium up $3 too at $322 an ounce. The lows and the highs in the gold spot market, quite a lot of action going on in there in a relatively narrow band, but $1,043.70 for the low and $1,058.50 for the high, about $15 in there. At $1,054.10, your gold is up $331.20 year-to-year for a 45.76% return on your investment. As we went into the airtime, I was looking on the other websites there, and I come up with a price of $1,057.50, up $12.80. Another price at $1,055.30, up $14.90, of $1,054.90, up $10.20. So the guess is going to really be yours, your call to make. Nevertheless, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed off 250 points on Friday at 9713. The NASDAQ lost 52 at 2045, and the S&P down 30 as well at 1036. We'll pick it all up right there and continue this broadcast after this brief commercial intermission.
The look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune, and many of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
You're thirsty. You put the glass under the faucet, turn it on, nothing. No water in your tap, no water in the stores, no water for your children.
Millions of Americans go without water during hurricanes, droughts, and chemical spills. They're forced to wait for government deliveries of bottled water.
But now, you can produce pure drinking water from any source. Ocean water, contaminated well water.
The dirtiest, nastiest, smelliest water.
The secret is U.S. patent-pending C-panels. Technology transfer from the University of Alabama. They use sunlight to distill clean water, one pure H2O molecule at a time. Impervious to bacteria and mold and 100% solar powered.
Simple and affordable, they start at less than $100 and make up to a gallon per day of delicious water per panel.
The more sun you have, the more water you get. 205-246-6492.
Or visit cpanel.com, spelled S-E-A-panel.com.
cpanel.com.
And we've returned once again here on our Monday, November the 2nd, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local. Sure do miss my Jeff Thomas in bump there. Maybe we'll get Aaron or some of the other folks on the network to get that corrected. Certainly like to start the broadcast off well. Without my little triggers, I'm kind of like a trained circus pony. I kind of need to hear my man at the right time, get me in the mood to do these broadcasts. Anyway, continuing back again, we've got the crude oil this morning up 57 cents, running at $77.57 a barrel. The USDX is running, it's off 21 basis points at 76.20, and that's kind of what's pulling all these numbers around largely. It's also specious. You know, I just didn't have the heart to get into the financial news this morning. This is such a crapshoot. If we can get the couple of clips I've got to fire and play for us, then we'll have a little better understanding of that from people far more intelligent in all this than I am. In the Forex, the foreign exchange rates, the Canadian dollar this morning up 44 basis points. Again, this is in regards to or in relation to or reaction to this USDX being down 21. But the Canadian dollar is up 44 basis points, still at 93 cents U.S. The Mexican peso up 64 points at 8 cents still. The euro up 15 basis points, trading at $1.48. A British pound loses 59 basis points in early morning trading, is trading at $1.64 U.S. And the Swiss franc, that venerable little Swiss franc, standing at almost shoulder-to-shoulder parity with the U.S. dollar, moved up a little bit, 32 basis points, and still trades at 98 cents in the bond market. The two-year bond continuing to be very low. Lots of information you could read about for yourself on Bloomberg this morning about the bonds and how that is impacting, how people are investing in that. But the two-year bond is at 0.90%. We've become their debtors when they buy the bonds. But the two-year bond's running at 0.90%. The 10-year at 3.40. A lot of discussion about the 10-year this morning as well on the net. And the 30-year is at 4.25. In the mortgage market, the 15-year mortgage moves up a little bit more again, 4.60% for a 15-year mortgage, up from 4.56 a month ago, trying to get people to be very encouraged to look at this 30-year mortgage. Of course, I think that's a fool's gambit, but the 30-year mortgage is running at 5.16, unchanged from a month ago. So there's very little difference between the 15-year mortgage interest rate and the 30-year mortgage interest rate as kind of a seductive come-on. But if you just do the math and look at a amortization table, you'll see that you're going to have to spend a gob and a bunch of money to get involved with a 30-year mortgage as opposed to a 15. And I wouldn't recommend buying anything right now if you can at all hold on. But if you're faced with a decision between getting pitched out on your head and refinancing, I'd look at a 15-year mortgage if it's at all possible. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about human ecology. We'll start the broadcast out with that. Of course, as you know, I've been hammering away on this economics, principles of economics text for some time now, several weeks. I'm almost done with the book. I've learned an awful lot that I didn't know before. Putting it in a different perspective, I've got little bits here, little bits there. I read encyclopedia articles on economics, but I've never sat down and just simply, well, this is actually, that's not correct either. I've got two others that I've read completely and studied, economics textbooks, but not quite the way that this one is put together. This is a little bit better book. And it really does show a lot, even though it is written in plain English. Let's continue. Ecology, human ecology, what is it? What is human ecology? Human ecology deals with the spatial aspects of the symbiotic relations of human beings and human institutions. Now, you can go back and look at the early law dictionaries and find that human is basically just a monster. A human being, as we've talked about before, those are politically socialized animals and their institutions. We're talking about ecology here, human ecology, and it deals with the spatial aspects. What is spatial? What is it all about? What does that mean anyway? When you look at it, of course, the root there is space. Jump over to the dictionary here quickly. What is spatial? Here's spatial. Let's see if I can find it quickly enough. Oh, come on. Spatial. Spatial. Spatial is of space. Happening or existing in space. What's space? Happening or existing in space. What's space? Let's look at space. Space is a little bit more interesting. Sometimes these words, you have to go to the roots. It's to flourish, to expand, to succeed, whence comes speed, distance extending in all directions, space again, distance extending in all directions, the continuous expanse extending in all directions or in three dimensions within which all things exist. Spatial, got a dog barking outside, distance extending in all directions, the continuous expanse extending in all directions or in three dimensions within which all things exist, variously thought of as boundless or indeterminately finite. And it continues, the area available or used on a page and so on and so forth, lots of that. Spatial. Human ecology deals with the spatial aspects of the symbiotic relations. What's a symbiotic relation? It's important. They're going to define these terms right off the bat. Symbolism, symbolic, here we go. Symbolic. Symbiotic. That's what I really want. Symbiosis. Symbiosis is all that my dictionary has here. This is a Webster's Collegiate. Symbiosis. It's to live together, basically. And in biology, it's the intimate living together of two kinds of organisms. Very important. Two kinds of organisms. Especially where such association is of mutual advantage. A similar relationship of mutual interdependence between persons or groups. Very important. Basic words. So again, the human ecology deals with the spatial aspects of the symbiotic relations of human beings and human institutions. So you can think of yourself as one of those human beings, those humming bees, those animals, and our institutions. It's a symbiotic relationship between our government, if you will, or our institutions, and there's many more than just government. But it's this symbiotic relationship, this interdependence between the human being and the human institutions. Human ecology aims to discover the principles and the factors involved in the changing patterns of spatial arrangement of population and institutions resulting from the interplay of living beings in a continuously changing culture. This is some very important words. These are some very important, this is very important verbiage, I should say. As we so often do study Agenda 21 and the writings of these various think tanks, of course, all this out of the Encyclopedia of the Social Sciences. This published a long time ago. Let's see if we can get a publishing date. 1937 was when it was reissued, but it was originally copyrighted by the Macmillan Company back in 1931. This book is really designed to educate the German people in the follow-up between World War I and World War II. Der Führer's professors. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The world appears to be on the brink of collapse. Experts say a pinch of heirloom vegetable seed could soon be the most valuable resource on Earth because it will provide healthy food now and every year after. SurvivalistSeeds.com now has the heirloom garden seed time capsule, allowing you to store your seeds for the future anywhere, even underground, for 100 years. The heirloom garden seed time capsule can withstand 3 tons of weight, is 100% rodent-proof, waterproof, and comes with a whopping 6,000 healthy vegetable seeds from 20 varieties that will grow anywhere in the USA. Unless you trust the government, the Heirloom Garden Seed Time Capsule and Heirloom Seeds from SurvivalistSeeds.com is your long-term food solution. Our competition charges 10 cents to $1.25 per seed for these same heirloom varieties. But you can now have a head of lettuce, a bundle of carrots, a basket of tomatoes, a giant watermelon, and 16 other varieties for about a penny a seed each. Be prepared. Buy your heirloom seeds today from SurvivalistSeeds.com and have food insurance for your family forever. Visit SurvivalistSeeds.com.
SurvivalistSeeds.com is owned by Big John Lipscomb, host of the Don't Tread on Me radio show.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Have you heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower, and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. Enginebrain.com. Enginebrain.com. Does ordinary talk radio give you the blahs?
Blah, blah, blah.
This ain't your daddy's talk radio. OracleBroadcasting.com.
Okay, so once again, human ecology aims to discover these principles and factors involved in the changing patterns of spatial arrangement, of population and institutions resulting from the interplay of living beings in a continuously changing culture. I mean, this stuff looks like it came right out of the opening chapters of Agenda 21, but really this predates it by so much. But understanding this becomes even more important as we go through the day's discussion. Because we do have these changing patterns of spatial arrangements of the population. Every day we hear about another group of special people being imported into the United States for whatever specious reason the administration comes up with to bring them in, whether they're coming from Palestine or whether they're AIDS-infected creatures or whatever. But all the time. There's a reason for that. We're going to cover that a little bit in this broadcast. But then each of the populations out there all across the world have these institutions. You know, marriage has been called an institution, the institution of marriage. The organized religions are institutions, the institution of organized religions. Governments themselves are institutions, as is banking and finance and all the rest. Free and gratuitous public education has become an institution. Nationalized health care. Nationalized automobile construction and distribution, so on and so forth, all of that. The changing patterns of spatial arrangement of population, north versus south, northern hemisphere versus southern hemisphere, east versus west, as above, so below, any way you want to look at this dialectic. In a continuously changing culture, our culture is constantly changing. We're being asked now to accept on a special plane homosexuals and bisexuals and transsexuals and things like that. Constantly and continuously changing culture. Continuing here from the article, it has but little in common, however, with plant and animal ecology, for while the symbiotic processes are essentially alike for all organisms, key word there, organisms, the organs and the bodies of the United Nations system, the beast system, organs, organisms, their mode of operation in the human community is hardly comparable with the food chains and the environmental controls existing in plant and lower animal communities. Just the word community here advisedly. Man, the authors write, again out of the Encyclopedia of the Social Sciences, man is a cultural animal and is able, therefore, to modify his natural environment and to create within limitations his own habitat. Habitat for Humanity, the Biosphere Project, man-made global warming, man-made climate change, all of that nonsense. The division of labor that he effects with members of his own species determines the basic elements of his communal mode of living. The division of labor that man affects with members of his own species. Specialists, experts say, laborers, carpenters, welders, plumbers, lawyers, physicians, professors, the division of labor, bankers, realtors, politicians, the division of labor that he affects with members of his own species, determines the basic elements of his communal mode of living. Not everybody lives in the same happy neighborhood. And since this is fundamentally a cultural rather than a biological phenomena, it is subject to continuous change in form. Those nice subdivisions near the town, originally occupied by the mercantilist and the entrepreneur, were vacated when too many people came to town for all those jobs, and so the quote-unquote elite moved out even further, the mansions and the villas in the country, and the wage earners bought their homes through this division of labor process. We can see it's subject to continuous changes. The boundaries of a town or a city expand to accommodate an influx of new people. Hence, the sequences in the human community are not comparable with those in the plant or the animal community. The subject matter of human ecology can be classified under three general categories. Ecological organization, which represents the spatial, in space, the spatial arrangements of populations and institutions, the hierarchy, the structure, three-dimensional space, space and time continuum, space, their institutions, where's the church, where's the hospital, where do the people live, where are the workplaces, where are the roads, the intersections, the railroad centers, and all of that. Again, under three general categories, the ecological organization, which represents the spatial arrangements of population and institutions at any given time, either within a local community or within a larger constellation of communities. You got 3, 4, 5, or 6. You've got Seattle, you've got Bellevue, you've got Kirkland, you've got Redmond, you've got Bothell, North City, Lakewood, Lakeview, all of that. It's all around. The same happens right where you are, no doubt. The constellation of communities, if you will. Second, the ecological dominance, which represents the dynamic or functional aspects of spatial relationship. Again, the ecological dominance, which represents the dynamic or the functional aspects of these spatial relationships. And then ecological succession, which describes temporal changes in the human community. Opening up a window on a new science, if you will, human ecology. The research in the field of human ecology has been done largely by geographers. And if you recall last week's discussion with Vicki Davis, we talked about the cadastral, the idea of establishing a three-dimensional system of land survey, if you will, the GIS, the geographic information systems, and the geospatial systems, the positioning systems, happening as we speak from the near-Earth orbiting satellites and the great IT networks. Information technology. This is the work of the largely done by geographers. Students of population, we'll find out about that in a moment, but largely that's census, and the economic historians. You could just ask, who came up with the economic theory of history? Who were some of the most prominent writers in the economic theory of history? I'll give you a clue. One of them was Karl Mordecai Marx. Give you an idea where we're going here. The geographers have focused their attention, for the most part, on the environmental factors determining the location, size, and general contour of the community without giving much consideration to the spatial aspects of division of labor resulting from cultural change. So the geographer looks down from space. Remember, we went through that 1955 symposium from Princeton, man's role in changing the face of the earth. And we discussed about how we transition from this agrarian to an industrial kind of a community. And as that happens, so also changes the way we live, what we look like in our habitations from space. Pick it up right there on the other side of the bottom of the hour break. Stay with us. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail and is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products, including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
Look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune, and many of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
And we've returned once again, looking into this concept of human ecology, right out of the Encyclopedia of the Social Sciences. Again, this is a textbook that was written. It's not a textbook. This is a set of encyclopedias, really for the social sciences, no doubt about it, prepared for and used in the, if you will, the Hochschule for Politics. Many of these authors considered to be their Führer's professors. This is a way that you can bring a people from almost general ignorance up to a fairly high level of intellect in not a too great of a distance of time, especially on an evening school program. The whole idea of continuing education. But if Der Führer was going to be successful and Germany would become the new Rome at his time, then the people would have to be up to the task of ruling the world. And so we study out of this, not only knowing that, but we also refer to it because if we're going to be the replacement set after the collapse of this system that we have today, perhaps it would be to our advantage to be a little bit aware of some of these things. And certainly, when you look at human ecology, it's exceedingly difficult not to see immediately urban planning in all of this. Urban planning. There are many people who have specialized inside of this division of labor. Remember this idea that I've posited before, the idea of someone gaining specific knowledge and talent or ability or some mystery, and then they clamber up onto the great sandstone wall of life and they carve themselves out a little niche, and they clamber inside their little niche, and then they wall themselves in with specialized language and skills, and they hang out their shingle. And so some call themselves urban planners. Some call themselves civil engineers or land surveyors. Some of them are economists and so on and so forth, endlessly in this division of labor, this pluralist society that we live in. But the geographer, again, inside of this concept of human ecology, the geographer has focused his attention, for the most part, on the environmental factors determining the location, the size, and the general contour of the community, without giving much consideration to the spatial aspects of division of labor resulting from cultural change. In other words, he's the map maker, largely. He looks at the watershed boundaries and the river that flows through it, you know, and the roads and all of that, and where the houses are and where this town center is and so on and so forth. The geographer. They're also the ones that are looking down from space when you click on Google Earth and fly someplace. They can give you a complete left, right driving instructions and so many tenths of a mile to get there. And how long as an estimate. Students of population have contributed data on the distribution, the migration, and the density. This could be your census taker. Students of population, more than just census, statisticians in general, students of the population have contributed, again, data on the distribution, the migration, and density. The chief limitations of their research from an ecological standpoint lies in the fact that they tend to regard the political area, usually the state, as the territorial unit of aggregation rather than the area which arises out of conditions of competitive cooperation. So rather than following a watershed boundary across state lines, like up the Mississippi River, then up the Arkansas and so on, all the way to the headwaters, typically students of population are working within a bound, a meets and bounds description, Missouri, Kansas, Colorado, and all of the documentation, all of the data is collected by state, sorted out by state. Again, human ecology. They also tend to consider equilibrium as fundamentally a relation between gross numbers and natural resources rather than as a phenomenon of a hierarchical structure of division of labor. Hence, their emphasis on mass migration rather than on individual mobility. And of course, we've talked in the past about the United Nations program of migration and development, which considers mass migration internationally, transboundary, transcontinental mass migrations, or the mass migration from the southern hemisphere to the north here in America. Economic historians, again, Adam Smith was one of those economic historians. Karl Marx was another one of these economic historians. I think Spencer would be another one of those economic historians. Economic historians have contributed to human ecology by tracing the growth of economic institutions from a spatial, England, Germany, France, as well as a temporal standpoint. Economic historians, we're going to discuss that in a moment. Human ecology offers many important problems for research, such as the distribution and the composition of populations, the delimitation of natural territorial groupings and zones of communal influence. Zones of communal influence. We've talked about the Asia-Pacific Economic Council. Blurring the boundaries between nations and among nations, including the United States, Northwest, Washington, Idaho, British Columbia, Alaska, China, Japan, Singapore, Korea. The spatial arrangements of institutions and services under, continuing, the spatial arrangement of institutions and services under different conditions of density and mobility and the nature of the interdependence of centers, both within the local area and within the larger constellation. This idea of the interdependence of centers. You might have something like the city of Seattle, for instance, and then you've got Bellevue and Redmond, and they're interdependent so much in that Bellevue and Redmond offer this and this, whereas the city of Seattle proper offers this and this, and then there's West Seattle and North Seattle and Bothell and the others all around Lake Washington, and each of those parts and pieces all the way out to Blake Island and Puget Sound and Bremerton, the naval shipyards, all of that, they all contribute a little bit to the greater metropolitan area of Seattle, Washington. Continuing, knowledge of ecological processes is basic to all social sciences, as social and political institutions have a spatial base and arise and function in response to changing conditions of movement and competition. We're going to see that's the same when we get into economics 101 again. Institutional stability is largely dependent upon the stability of space relations, the constant changing patterns of division of labor, and of population distribution necessitate a continuous process of institutional adjustment. And that ends the article here by R. D. McKenzie. But if we can wrap our minds around the idea that for almost 80 years, in general, we've had these super social scientists working. You know, it was Auguste Comte that created the idea of sociology, coined the term, where we actually put man into a petri dish and slide him under the microscope and we begin to study man for the first time ever, really. And it caught on. His whole system of positive thinking really caught on. Oh, not the positive thinking you might be thinking of, but positivism, a philosophy. It really caught on. Today, sociologists just about run the planet. The way that Auguste Comte visioned it would be that we would have the captains of finance and industry running the planet with an appointed dictator, and that appointed dictator would be supported by a cadre of super social scientists in all that he did, and that the world would be divided up into regions, and each of those regions would have a bank, and those banks would serve as the temple, and we would worship woman as a god, in a nutshell. And the Saint Simonians had much of that too. We could go into José Esteban Antonio Echeverria, a very prominent South American positivist, but we'll leave that for another day. Let's go into the distribution of income. We've been talking about a lot of these various parts and pieces, and there's so much more. It's impossible in a radio format like this to go into the principles of economics with great depth, but we can do little snippets here and snippets there, and today we'll talk about the distribution of the income.
Thirsty. You put the glass under the faucet, turn it on, nothing. No water in your tap. No water in the stores. No water for your children.
Millions of Americans go without water during hurricanes, droughts, and chemical spills. They're forced to wait for government deliveries of bottled water.
But now, you can produce pure drinking water from any source. Ocean water, contaminated well water.
The dirtiest, nastiest, smelliest water.
The secret is U.S. patent-pending sea panels. Technology transfer from the University of Alabama. They use sunlight to distill clean water one pure H2O molecule at a time. Impervious to bacteria and mold and 100% solar powered.
Simple and affordable, they start at less than $100 and make up to a gallon per day of delicious water per panel.
The more sun you have, the more water you get. 205-246-6492.
Or visit cpanel.com, spelled S-E-A-panel.com.
cpanel.com.
The world appears to be on the brink of collapse. Experts say a pinch of heirloom vegetable seed could soon be the most valuable resource on Earth because it will provide healthy food now and every year after. SurvivalistSeeds.com now has the heirloom garden seed time capsule, allowing you to store your seeds for the future anywhere, even underground, for 100 years. The heirloom garden seed time capsule can withstand 3 tons of weight, is 100% rodent proof, waterproof, and comes with a whopping 6,000 healthy vegetable seeds from 20 varieties that will grow anywhere in the USA. Unless you trust the government, the heirloom garden seed time capsule and heirloom seeds from survivalistseeds.com is your long-term food solution. Our competition charges 10 cents to $1.25 per seed for these same heirloom varieties, but you can now have a head of lettuce, a bundle of carrots, a basket of tomatoes, a giant watermelon, and 16 other varieties for about a penny a seed each. Be prepared. Buy your heirloom seeds today from survivalistseeds.com and have food insurance for your family forever. Visit survivalistseeds.com.
survivalistseeds.com is owned by Big John Lipscomb, host of the Don't Tread on Me radio show.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The Intel Strike Report.
And I just want to thank you for everything that you guys are doing to help people understand what's going on in this world.
You know what? You guys, thank you for what you do, and keep doing it.
Now, if we weren't in such a real pickle here, not only in the United States but around the world, perhaps I could, you know, give classes on air on how to silk screen placards and signs. Maybe we could talk about marching on Washington. Maybe we could form another one of these pluralistic groups. You know, that's not where I've come from on all this broadcast. I'm more of a political realist. I understand that we have a real serious problem. We are at the tipping point in human development. And if we do nothing, like I've said before, we will get exactly what is planned for us. And so if we're going to understand the change, or if we desire to actually be the change we're looking for, it only behooves us to understand just a little bit about the system that we live in. To just simply chant, end the Fed, is so ludicrous. Without a better understanding of what all's going on inside of the global economic marketplace. And for those that have taken any time at all to research it, it just seems like, you know, it's a mockery of our intelligence. It's a panacea that goes nowhere. It's just basically another attempt to treat a symptom. Looking at it from the symptom and victim standpoint, as opposed to correctly analyzing and diagnosing the disease, the super social disease. Political realism demands that we use our minds. So anyway, this textbook in chapter 25, the distribution of the income, again, I'm working out of the Principles of Economics, published back in 1953 by the D.C. Heath & Company, James Gemmill and Howard L. Balsley. 1953, just about smack off in the middle between the time of the creation of the Federal Reserve banking system and the Great Depression, and the time when at last Nixon got us completely off the gold standard. So it's kind of at a midpoint here. And the students taking this course, of course, don't know the things. They don't know the end of the story that we know. And yet, because they're looking back further into the past than we could see, and they're because they grew up at a time period where their parents and grandparents were probably giving them plenty of information in their ears, this author needs to proceed carefully so as not to offend that sensibility. But this chapter 25, The Distribution of the Income, starts with a summary of some of the things that have been learned. I'll just share a little bit of that with you. Our study of economics began with a survey of the American economy in which we tried to get a clear picture of the economic conditions under which we live. And so here, right out of human ecology, we're starting off with an economic view of history. This survey was followed by an explanation of the national income and consumption. You've all heard 100 times over that this is a nation of consumers. Well, it's important. Consumption plays a big role in that. We learned of the great importance of consumption in the determination of the national income and its resulting effects upon the prosperity of the economy. Consumption is key to all of this stuff. We learned that production is made possible through the contributions of landowners, laborers, capitalists, and enterprisers. And for those of you who have ever read The Physiocrats or have launched off and got a copy and read Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, you'll understand that when Adam Smith said that the true wealth of a nation is land, labor, and capital, there was a fourth condition unmentioned. And these authors correctly add the fourth ingredient. In other words, it's land, labor, capital, and entrepreneur, all four parts. When you hear about the middle class, you, unfortunately, are thinking about the labor. The real middle class exists in the level of the entrepreneur or the enterpriser. That's the real middle class. Not the working slave, not the serf on the field, not the one with their head bowed over and their elbows pumping, going for 5 miles of beans per day, running that hoe all day long, hoeing the beans. But that's not something that's commonly known. After goods have been produced, it becomes necessary to put them in the possession of customers at the proper time and place. This function, which we call exchange, is performed by marketing agencies. Now, that's just not Wall Street marketing agencies. There are many agencies or agents of marketing. With the aid of credit and banking services, each person who contributes something useful to the production or exchange of goods expects to receive his share of that income that will be realized from the sale of those goods. This sharing or division of society's income among individuals is referred to as the distribution of income. Now remember, we start out understanding this idea of the niche builders. They wall themselves in with specialized language and skills. And when they created the concept of the school of economics, if you will, whether you could trace that to Adam Weishaupt and his time period and the formation of the Illuminati, or you want to run it all the way back to the Templars and the Hospitallers and the rest, is up to you. But in any case, this idea of the distribution of the income is going to be the focus of our discussion. This term, the distribution, is often used, that in this process then of the niche builders, they're walling themselves in with language, and so they're creating the language as we go through this textbook, advancing one new idea, one new principle, one new theory, one new thesis at a time, and defining their terms. This is much the same way as I approach my own research when I'm working outside of a textbook. When you come across words that you don't understand, you can look them up. If you're working from a legal reference, you can look up things in the Black's Law Dictionary or the Bouvier or one of those. If you're working from something that has more literary significance, then you could look it up in just a regular dictionary. But I always like to pick a dictionary contemporary with the writer. So the quotes or the dictionary definitions I gave earlier were contemporary in the 1930s from a dictionary that I have published at that time period. All right, continuing. It says, again, the term distribution is often used in newspapers and periodicals to refer to the distribution of goods and services to the consumer. This is a common use of the term, but economists, when using distribution in such a sense, usually specify distribution of goods. When economists use the word distribution alone, it is understood to refer to the distribution of the income. This is a meta-language. It's language about language. When we talk about the obfuscatory linguistics of the logical positivist syntactician, we're talking about a meta-language. When someone says sustainable development, what do you think in your mind? There's a meta-language that runs behind it that gives those that are in the social sciences a more clear understanding of what they meant when they said sustainable development. Continuing, there are some further distinctions in the use of the term distribution. Personal distribution refers to the sharing of income among individuals. However, we may repeat that when the term distribution is used by economists, it normally refers to the distribution of the income to the factors of production. And as such, it may be considered functional distribution. So what are these factors of production? Again, land, labor, capital, and enterpriser. The distribution of the income will go across all four of those headings. And it's rather curious how that works. And I'm going to skip forward. The income shares. The most important thing we wish to know about the distribution of income is how is it determined? The question is posed to all of us. What determines how much wages will be paid, how much rent will be paid, how much interest will be paid, and how much profit will be forthcoming? You can't even begin to go into business if you haven't got a clue about any of this. You'll go broke. 90% of all businesses fail. Why? Because their enterpriser quit. 90% of all those businesses that succeed, the enterpriser didn't quit. He knew what he was doing when he went into it. We'll be right back on the other side of this top of the hour break for hour number two. Stay with us.
Have you heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. enginebrain.com. enginebrain.com.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail and is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products, including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website, again, is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Oh, my.
And welcome back to our Monday, November the 2nd, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local. As we begin our second hour of today's live two-hour broadcast, we come to you Monday through Friday here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com. Yes, my name is William Robertson. If you just joined us, typically we have good news, hard facts, and workable solutions for you each day. Today we're going to do a little bit more book learning, looking at the distribution of income, the distribution of the income within this economic model that we find ourselves living in, looking at how the income is distributed across these four factors of production: the land, the labor, the capital, and the enterpriser, which could also be considered the management in this particular consideration. But we come into something here that is known as the theory of marginal production. Now, in the past, when I've talked about sustainable development, it was after over a year of study of it that I finally came to the understanding that if you wanted to boil all of what I found out about sustainable development down to just one word, you could use the word demand. Demand. And we've talked in the past, I've certainly done hours and hours of this on the radio, about demand and supply. Or some people say supply and demand. Same thing. But it really has a big, it has a great impact on all of our understandings of economics. If we don't understand demand and supply, we're not going to quite be up to speed. So let's continue. He says, we're now familiar with the important implications of demand and supply in economic life. Of course, you're not. I am, because I've read 398 pages up to this point. But just stick with me. Whatever the product, if the demand for it is great, and yet its supply highly limited, its price will tend to be high. Are you with me? We all know that, right? If the demand for it is great, and yet its supply is highly limited, its price will tend to be high. If the demand is slight, and the supply large, the price will tend to be low. Right, now we're thinking of these factors of production now. The price of each of the factors is designated by economists as the supply price. I don't expect you to get all this. You need to make notes. Just go back and listen to the archives once or twice if you're interested at all. Or just let it flow across your mind. The supply price of labor is wages. The supply price of land is rent. The supply price of capital is interest. And the supply price of enterprise, or management, or the entrepreneur, is profit. This supply price is actually another term for costs. We often read in the newspaper about costs and prices. Such newspaper articles are considering costs as the amount of money paid for the factors of production. Costs are, therefore, really prices. But they have a specific meaning as the prices of the factors of production. Economists use the term cost and supply price interchangeably, again, defining the language of economics. Demand and supply analysis tells us that if labor, for example, is very plentiful, as it is during depression, as it is today, and the demand for that labor is slight, as it is today, the supply price, wages, will be low. This is a truism which we may easily observe. During prosperous times, some types of labor are much more scarce than others. This has been true of construction workers when industries are expanding. In fact, they were so scarce that the borders were wide open and a great influx of Mexicans and others came in to round out the construction jobs, almost dominating the industry. At such time, the wages or the supply price of construction workers will be higher than the wages of other workers. Today, a carpenter, a framer, a roofer, when there's no construction, couldn't get a job if he worked for free. We'll be right back.
It's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune, and many of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's Linux, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
You're thirsty. You put the glass under the faucet, turn it on, nothing. No water in your tap, no water in the stores, no water for your children.
Millions of Americans go without water during hurricanes, droughts, and chemical spills. They're forced to wait for government deliveries of bottled water.
But now, you can produce pure drinking water from any source. Ocean water, contaminated well water.
The dirtiest, nastiest, smelliest water.
The secret is U.S. patent-pending sea panels. Technology transfer from the University of Alabama. They use sunlight to distill clean water, one pure H2O molecule at a time. Impervious to bacteria and mold and 100% solar powered.
Simple and affordable, they start at less than $100 and make up to a gallon per day of delicious water per panel.
The more sun you have, the more water you get. 205-246-6492.
Or visit cpanel.com, spelled S-E-A-panel.com.
cpanel.com.
If we've returned again, so let's go back into this principle of derived demand. You know, this whole textbook is written in a new style of English, a departure from things prior. This textbook was written for young people perhaps in their second year of college. Maybe they've had 2 years of general studies and now they're going to go into their degree study, and so they're studying economics. Maybe this would be after 2 years of college. And yet, at the same time, these are relatively short sentences written in very plain and common English with lots of repetition throughout the book. They keep reminding you over and over again what you've already learned up to this point. And so if this information sounds a little complex to you or a little bit too heady, it's just a testimony of how much further down the rabbit hole we've gone in the last 60 years. The principle, well, let's go into it again, the principle of derived demand, a further and important consideration in demand and supply analysis for the factors of production, is that the demand for factors is derived from the demand for finished goods, which the factors are expected to produce. And again, the factors are land, labor, capital, and the entrepreneur. Therefore, the demand for factors of production is called the derived demand. The principle of derived demand tells us that the demand for any factor of production will be dependent upon the demand for the finished product forthcoming from that factor's element, which is going to be very important when we get into the part on wages. Dropping down a little bit later here, a little further, I should say. On the other hand, the demand for steel in an industrial, we don't need that. Further, since the income to be distributed to the factors of production will be the money received from the sale of the finished goods, it is obvious that in the long run, the factors of production cannot receive in distribution any more than is taken in by the enterprise from the sale of the goods. You with me? When you add all of it together at the end of the day, what you pay out for land and labor and capital and in profit to the entrepreneur cannot exceed the amount that you've brought in as income from the sale or the marketing of your product, whatever it is you've produced. Therefore, the amount of income going to the factors is necessarily limited in the long run by the receipts from the sale of the finished products. Can't be any other way. Any deviation from that, the business goes out of business. Why is so much manufacturing left the United States? Why is China kicking our butt right now on all things economic? Why are we staggering? Much of that's going to be revealed as we go on. Another implication in the principle of derived demand is that the factors will receive a share in the income of the enterprise relative to their importance in the enterprise. Land, labor, capital, and the enterpriser or the entrepreneur are all important, but they have different importances, different weights attributed to them. We'll later go into much more detail concerning the relative parts of the national income going to each factor of production, but here we may state that if land and capital contribute to the final production to a lesser degree than do labor and enterprise, the shares of income they receive will, of course, be relatively smaller. And any increase, not avoidable, in the cost of land or the interest on capital diminishes or a remainder, if you will, available for labor and for the enterpriser. And no one's going to stay in business if they're losing money, folks. We'll learn later that the most important factor of production in respect to distribution of the income resulting from the total product is labor. The second most important is enterprise, while land and capital are the least important. The enterpriser who wishes to employ the labor certainly employs it only for the contribution that labor will make in the production of the finished good. The enterpriser, therefore, is interested in the productivity of that labor, its contribution to the product. He's also interested in the productivity of land and capital as well as his own efforts. Therefore, in the last analysis, the demand for factors of production is really a demand for the productivity of those factors. You get somebody who comes along and thinks they're special. They've got their degree. They've got their little sheepskin. They think they're really special, but they're not productive. Could an enterpriser succeed by keeping someone like that around? Deadwood? If the property tax on a piece of property is jacked through the ceiling, would an enterpriser be able to continue to run his tanning salon or his manufactory there? Or would it be to his own interest and financial success to get the hell away from that high tax rate? If the assessed value goes up and up and up, it doesn't really help him out. He's usually there on a lease. If the interest rate on capital borrowed goes up and up and up and up, can the enterpriser continue to borrow money to build, you know, bring in new things, new machines and whatnot? This demand for productivity of factors in conjunction with the available supply of those factors will have a general influence upon the supply prices of those factors. Drop down a little further here. We talk about the marginal productivity theory. The marginal productivity theory states that under conditions of pure competition, which you don't know about yet, the payment to a factor of production will tend to equal the value of the marginal product of that factor. Again, these are things that you wouldn't necessarily recognize. The value of the marginal product refers to the dollars and cents value of the extra product forthcoming because of the employment of an extra unit of factor. Every person that works in a company, for a concern, in a firm, every one of them are a unit of factor. They're a unit of the factor of labor. Every building is a unit of factor, the factor of land and perhaps capital. Every machine is a factor of capital. Everyone that works in the management team is a factor in enterprise. The value of this extra production in dollars and cents is what we refer to as the value of marginal product. We must understand, therefore, that when we speak of marginal productivity theory, we're talking about the money values of additional units of output made by factors in the production process. Maybe you didn't know what the management is doing in their offices, all dressed in their nice clothes, while everyone else is busy keeping their elbows pumping and their heads down. They're crunching numbers, trying to get to the bottom line. It's obvious that an employer will not wish to employ an extra unit of a factor of production if he must pay that extra unit a supply price that is greater than the value of the marginal product. I'm telling you folks, understand this. This is where all of our jobs went. Bye-bye.
The world appears to be on the brink of collapse. Experts say a pinch of heirloom vegetable seed could soon be the most valuable resource on Earth because it will provide healthy food now and every year after. SurvivalistSeeds.com now has the heirloom garden seed time capsule, allowing you to store your seeds for the future anywhere, even underground, for 100 years. The heirloom garden seed time capsule can withstand 3 tons of weight, is 100% rodent-proof, waterproof, and comes with a whopping 6,000 healthy vegetable seeds from 20 varieties that will grow anywhere in the USA. Unless you trust the government, the Heirloom Garden Seed Time Capsule and Heirloom Seeds from SurvivalistSeeds.com is your long-term food solution. Our competition charges 10 cents to $1.25 per seed for these same heirloom varieties. But you can now have a head of lettuce, a bundle of carrots, a basket of tomatoes, a giant watermelon, and 16 other varieties for about a penny a seed each. Be prepared. Buy your heirloom seeds today from SurvivalistSeeds.com and have food insurance for your family forever. Visit SurvivalistSeeds.com.
SurvivalistSeeds.com is owned by Big John Lipscomb, host of the Don't Tread on Me radio show.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With Point branded slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Have you heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower, and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. Enginebrain.com. Enginebrain.com.
Pulling back the curtain to expose the matrix. Axiom Radio with Rob Chowder. Weeknights, 7 to 9 Central on the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
And, of course, this marginal productivity theory is applied across all four of the primary factors of production: the land, the labor, the capital, and the enterpriser. And it's a part of the mathematical model of a successful business model. All these have to work together. They're interdependent. They're interrelated. Significance, well, there's a long dissertation here, the limitations of this particular theory. But it's good to understand it. And I will also mention that as throughout this textbook, again, this is a used copy, I know what was studied in the course because the person that owned the book originally, Kay Wilson, don't know her, never met her before, but she went through and she made little stars or check marks by the chapters that they studied, and then she had a habit, wish she'd used a ruler, of underlining and making notes in the margins, much the same way that I do. I had to erase all of her underlines. She can't seem to draw. I wish she'd used a ruler. Anyway, long story short, this is one of the chapters in the textbook that was skipped. Many important chapters in this textbook were skipped. There's things that you can learn, and there's those that will just only go no further than what is required. Those are the ones that come out of school with a marginal understanding, maybe C's and B's. Those that read, digest, and compare the entire text are the ones that will oftentimes come out with an A. I don't know whether they even use A's and D's anymore, but they might do something different. So let's go into the significance of the marginal productivity theory. We've reiterated that the marginal productivity theory is a general explanation of the distribution of the income among the factors of production, and that means that it explains how businessmen come to decisions about the payments of the various factors. Very important. In this sense, the real meaning of the productivity theory becomes quite simple. It may be thus stated: factors of production tend to be paid what they are worth. I'll say that again. Factors of production tend to be paid what they're worth. So if you got some guy coming to work, he was hired because he was lighting the loafers, or perhaps someone coming to work because they swing a purse, or someone coming to work because they just happen to be Negro or Hispanic or Asian or white, and for no other reason, the factors of production tend to be paid what they're worth. If they're asked to pay more, let's say you have all of a sudden you change the rules of the game, you raise the minimum wage, it throws the whole system into upheaval. the enterpriser may go out of business. He may have to close down. No one goes into business to lose money. Everyone goes into business to make money. And we're not talking this morning about the wage earner, so to speak. If we're going to be the solution we're looking for, we're the ones probably, there's only maybe a couple hundred that'll be listening to this message, hopefully. Some of you will take the initiative to become an entrepreneur, an enterpriser, and to go into business and create jobs. So maybe some of this will be useful to you. Perhaps some of you out there in the listening audience are wage earners. Maybe this will give you a little bit of a heads up as to what your employers might be facing, those nasty capitalists. Of course, they're not the capitalists. Land, labor, and capital, and the enterpriser. The capitalists are the bankers. The bondsman, the preferred stockholder. Continuing again now, regardless of the effect of the influences we've mentioned, such as rent control laws, labor legislation, and the existence of unions and monopolization, the fact remains that the rational businessman feels that he cannot pay any factor of production a greater amount than it is worth to him. Bottom line, coming right up. The attitude of management towards labor has often been summed up in a common phrase such as, I can't pay labor more than it is worth, or labor must be worthy of its hire. These are statements based essentially on the marginal productivity theory, perhaps unknowingly. The same attitude prevails towards the other factors of production. The enterpriser is unwilling to pay rents which are higher than he considers the value of the land or the buildings to him. Likewise, the enterpriser dislikes to pay interest rates which are higher than he thinks the productivity of the money capital he borrows will be to him. We may ask this question: what will prevent the payments to the factors of production other than management from being less than they are worth? The answer lies in what we may be called the transfer price of factors of production. The transfer price may be defined as the minimum supply price that will be accepted by a factor of production in its present employment. You're that factor of production. What is the minimum supply price that will be accepted by you? Continuing, generally, the transfer price is not greatly removed from what we may call the market price of a factor. For example, if the market price or the going price of department store sales clerks is a wage of $40 per week, again, 1953, wake up, okay, $40 a week, we would not expect the management of a given department store to be able to pay a great deal less than his wage and still retain its employees. In other words, if you pay below $40 a week, your employees are going to go someplace else. Of course, a given employee may have built up seniority on the job, entitling him to pension benefits or sickness pay or other advantages. Therefore, he may be willing to remain on his present job for as little as $35 per week, while in another job he could command $40. If, however, his pay were cut to less than $35 per week, he might very well quit his job and seek another. His transfer price would be, in this case, $35 a week. As the old saying goes, I was looking for a job when I found this one. I guess today's a good day as any for me to go look for another one. But there's something that's laying in here, something that came to my mind when I was reading this. We've been hearing over and over again how the Congress is getting involved with the banking institutions and other corporations, setting caps on salaries, setting caps on wages, setting caps on commissions and bonuses. There's always that Hegelian dialectic that lays back there in my mind. Thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. Could it be that the real agitation for setting those caps on those bonuses is not with the Congress or the media whores or the hysteria of the people, worried about big portions of their TARP funds going to these greedy Wall Street brokers? Perhaps it's actually coming from the bankers themselves. Perhaps it's actually coming from the institutions that see this as an opportunity to drastically reduce what is made by these various brokers, changing their role and their payment. They need to cut them down just to above the transfer price, just to that price where they won't leave Goldman Sachs or they won't leave J.P. Morgan Chase. But, of course, all that's in this discussion here today. Keep it in mind. The normal profit of the enterpriser, which is that amount of profit he requires to maintain him in his present employer, is the same thing as his transfer price. In other words, if I'm going to put 40 hours a week into my lemonade stand, I already have a number in mind, and if I'm not putting that number in my pocket on Friday night every week, consistently, week in and week out, my transfer price has just been met. I just found the amount it is that says I'm either going to go to China with my lemonade stand or I'm getting out of this lemonade stand business. We'll be right back.
History will always remember those with the strongest voice. You're listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Long live the revolution.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail and is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
Look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune, and many of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
Feel like I'm running naked without my Jeff Thomas bumps. Not liking this. Going on here a little bit deeper. Once again, that enterpriser's transfer price would in this case be $35 per week. The concept of the transfer price may be applied to the other factors of production. The normal profit of the enterpriser, which is that amount of profit he requires to maintain him in his present employment, is the same thing as his transfer price. Again, what is his transfer price? How long will we be able to add insult to injury to our enterprisers and our entrepreneurs before they're all out of this country? The author continues and says, we may then arrive at a summary statement. The inability of the enterpriser to overpay factors of production other than himself, as the enterpriser in the long run, see, he could overpay himself, coupled with his desire to maximize profits by attempting to minimize the payments of the other factors, will tend to retard overpayment of factors of production other than enterprise. On the other hand, the transfer prices of the other factors of production will tend to retard any underpayment of these factors of production. So he walks a very tight balance line there. Any overpayment of the factors. Two, three, four, back in progress again. I'm very sorry about that, folks. That's the first time I've ever dropped. Anyway, pick it up right where I put it in. A need for precise determination of the factor payments again. We found up to this point that the marginal productivity theory, which is in essence our old supply and demand theory, applied to the factors of production, will not give us exact results in terms of supply prices of factors. And there's a good many outside influences affecting the supply prices, and precise answers from the productivity theory usually require far too stringent assumptions. Nevertheless, we have arrived at a rather useful theory as a general explanation of the distribution of income. And again, any businessman must make decisions, and he must make them in precise terms of dollars and cents. Hence the study of economics. While the marginal productivity theory explains his actions and his attitudes, it does not explain his determination of the wages he pays, the rents he pays, or the interest payments he makes. How then does he determine these payments? And then they're going to go on in following chapters and explain them in great detail. But before we go on to that, let's continue. He says there are some aspects of the general distribution of income which must receive attention. The proportional contribution of each of the factors of production to the total product of a firm is significant, proportioned. Proportional contribution. We've already stated that labor and the enterpriser receive the largest proportion, always and forever. Labor and the enterpriser, they get most of the kitty. Land and capital, land and interest on the capital, receive the smaller ones. If the four factors of production receive incomes anywhere near proportional to their contributions to the firm's output, then we may say that labor and the enterpriser are the most important contributors to production. And we'll examine this proposition in another time. The author writes, what we're really doing, folks, is we're getting very close now to Karl Mordecai Marx. We're getting very close now to communism and the idea behind it. This antagonism, this ages old, 500 years and longer, ages old antagonism between the entrepreneur and labor. Overpayment and underpayment of the factors, again. A reason for underpayment of a factor of production may arise through the overpayment of another factor. It may be possible in an imperfect market, of course, that the presence of a powerful and influential labor union may cause workers to be paid more than they are worth. For the enterpriser to continue in production at all might in that case necessitate his taking a smaller profit. But of course, you know, he's not going to do that for long. In essence, labor would be overpaid and management, the enterpriser, underpaid. A great scarcity of labor of a particular type for a particular job in an imperfect market might make it necessary for the employer to pay labor too much in proportion to its contribution to production in an imperfect market. Sometimes they have to pay too much. It might be necessary for the employer to pay too much. Maybe there's a dearth of some people with specialized knowledge in some particular thing. And the enterpriser's new at the business, and he's going to have to attract away from others those employees, those specialists, those experts that say. On the other hand, it is possible that an enterpriser in a market characterized by imperfect competition could have such a strong monopoly position that the factor of production or enterprise could receive more than it's worth. You might think of Standard Oil and others, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, the federal government, the Federal Reserve banking system. A monopolistic enterpriser faced with a relatively large supply of labor might be able to keep labor in his employment while paying at a supply price lower than the value of its contribution to production. Food for thought, all this. Land might be so scarce for a given purpose that it could command an inordinately high rent. Money capital might be so scarce that an excessively high interest rate could be charged. That's why they're throwing trillions and trillions at the problem right now, billions and billions served, trying to make precious sure that there's plenty of money out there so that no excessively high interest rates need be charged so that the enterprisers feel comfortable coming back to work on Monday mornings, running their businesses. The situation in which any factor of production receives less than the value of its contribution to production has been called exploitation. Exploitation, first time used in this text, like on page 420 here. Exploitation. All throughout Agenda 21 and so many of the other documents produced by the United Nations, they always talk about the sovereign nations, the nation states, the member states have a right to exploit their natural resources. As Hal Anthony has pointed out on his broadcast, there are both sources and resources. The mineral wealth of a land are not resources, they are sources. Once you dig them all up, they ain't going to be making any more of them. But people are definitely resources, as is timber and fisheries and things like that. Some things are sources, some are resources. But again, it's the situation in which any factor of production receives less than the value of its contribution to production has been called exploitation, as the United Nations actually saying. That in all of these member states, the exploitation of the resources is just okie dokie. That they could receive less than the value of its contributions. That perhaps they should receive less for their natural resources and their sources, their mineral deposits. Less than their value. Here's a footnote. The meaning of this statement is really that exploitation occurs when a factor is paid less than its marginal revenue product, marginal physical product multiplied by the marginal revenue to the firm, and we have simplified the economist's more technical definition here in use. Sometimes when you study these old books, you know, one little thing like that, a footnote like that can be worth the price of admission, pay me back for all of the days that I've spent reading it. To come to a better understanding in the 1950s at the same time that the United Nations was coming into existence, to understand what economists meant by exploitation. That's valuable to me. Dropping down here a little bit further, an important... Sounds like a break coming right on top of us. We'll have to pick up relative shares of the factors when we come back, and a little bit more. We'll close out this chapter of this very interesting book.
You're thirsty. You put the glass under the faucet, turn it on, nothing. No water in your tap, no water in the stores, no water for your children.
Millions of Americans go without water during hurricanes, droughts, and chemical spills. They're forced to wait for government deliveries of bottled water.
But now, you can produce pure drinking water from any source. Ocean water, contaminated well water.
The dirtiest, nastiest, smelliest water.
The secret is U.S. patent-pending sea panels. Technology transfer from the University of Alabama. They use sunlight to distill clean water, one pure H2O molecule at a time. Impervious to bacteria and mold and 100% solar powered.
Simple and affordable, they start at less than $100 and make up to a gallon per day of delicious water per panel.
The more sun you have, the more water you get. 205-246-6492.
Or visit cpanel.com, spelled S-E-A-panel.com.
cpanel.com.
The world appears to be on the brink of collapse. Experts say a pinch of heirloom vegetable seed could soon be the most valuable resource on Earth because it will provide healthy food now and every year after. SurvivalistSeeds.com now has the heirloom garden seed time capsule, allowing you to store your seeds for the future anywhere, even underground, for 100 years. The heirloom garden seed time capsule can withstand 3 tons of weight, is 100% rodent-proof, waterproof, and comes with a whopping 6,000 healthy vegetable seeds from 20 varieties that will grow anywhere in the USA. Unless you trust the government, the Heirloom Garden Seed Time Capsule and Heirloom Seeds from SurvivalistSeeds.com is your long-term food solution. Our competition charges 10 cents to $1.25 per seed for these same heirloom varieties. But you can now have a head of lettuce, a bundle of carrots, a basket of tomatoes, a giant watermelon, and 16 other varieties for about a penny a seed each. Be prepared. Buy your heirloom seeds today from SurvivalistSeeds.com and have food insurance for your family forever. Visit SurvivalistSeeds.com.
SurvivalistSeeds.com is owned by Big John Lipscomb, host of the Don't Tread on Me radio show.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Radio X. With your host, Jimmy X.
Sundays at noon on the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
And we've returned once again on our last segment of today's podcast. It sounded a little bit slow today. It's simply because I didn't sleep last night. For whatever reason, I went to bed and was unable to sleep. Got up at about midnight, and I've been up for 24 hours right now. But anyway, relative shares of the factors. Again, the factors of production, land, labor, capital, and the enterprise. An important reason for exploitation between labor and management can be made clear by inspecting Table 46, which, of course, you can't, which lists the payments going in wages and salaries to labor, in profits to enterprisers or management, in rents on lands and building, and in interest for capital investments and loans. Now, these figures, folks, 1950, they go 1929, 1933, 1945, and 1950. But these are over the national income. Altogether too often, we have this myopic view where we're looking at things too locally. We become vocal local. That's the whole idea. We need to know just to say no and become vocal local. But at the same time, we need to understand how big this problem is, how big the solution set really is. But they go ahead and they list it all out. And it's apparent from that table that in the years 1929, 1945, and 1950, labor and management receives by far the lion's share of the national income. Labor and management. Land and capital receive very minor shares. And of course, they get this from the tax, you know, tax receipts and things like that. They can study it all out. Goes back to human ecology. These are those census people and the history, economic historians. In 1933, which we remember was the lowest year in the Great Depression, which might be 2009, in today's parlance, payments to capital were relatively high while profits were extremely low. And this illustrates an economic truth, that the residual share in business enterprise is profit going to the enterpriser. The residual share is always profit going to the enterpriser. You take away his ability to make that profit and you will watch him leave town. He will be gone. I guarantee it. Residual means remaining or what is left over. In other words, after wages, rent, and interest have been paid, the proportion of the income remaining is known as profit, which goes to the enterpriser or to management. We may explain the preceding truism more completely as follows. Any enterpriser will rent his land and buildings on a contractual basis. In other words, he contracts to pay so much rent on lease per year, and he must make this payment. When he borrows money for capital investments, he must pay the going rate of interest and must make a contract, which includes the pledging of security, which he will lose if he defaults on his interest payments. Thus, the two payments of rent and interest are contractual obligations which must be paid regardless of economic conditions. As for the wages and the salaries paid to labor, the enterpriser often doesn't enter into a contractual relationship with the trade unions or others. Nevertheless, the wage payment is an obligation and must also eventually be paid. States have laws enforcing the payment of wages due to workers. This leaves the payment of profits to management as the final share in the distribution process. The management or the enterpriser typically has no contract with himself or his partners or management associates requiring the payment of a certain amount of profit to himself or his associates. Management undertakes this responsibility of the enterprise upon the understanding that it is to receive whatever remains in the distribution process. And so then we must repeat our economic truth. Profit going to the enterpriser is the residual share or the remaining share in the distribution of income. And it better be enough. The exploitation between labor and management. Our foregoing analysis gives us two reasons why labor and management tend to exploit each other instead of exploiting land and capital. The first of these reasons is that the relative payments going in rent and interest to the land and capital are in normal years a very small part of the expenses of the average business enterprise. We may safely say this because since the payment to land and capital is a small proportion of national income, this same percentage distribution must apply to the average business firm. Since all other things being equal, labor could not stand to gain much by exploiting the land and capital factors, which together in recent years have constituted only 5% of the total income of the business. The only factor of production remaining to be exploited by labor is management. Further, the labor knows that management takes a relatively large share of the income of the firm, and now you know that too, second only to the payment going to labor, and knows further that the profit payment is the residual payment in the distribution of the income. You follow that? On the other hand, Management, likewise, does not usually exploit land and capital for the same reason that labor does not. Namely, that the payments are such a small share of the income of the firm that not much is to be gained by exploiting them. Management, however, can influence wages greatly. And all other things being equal, the only way remaining for management to make gains in profits is by exploiting labor. Now, the second of our reasons for the exploitation between labor and management lies in the contractual nature of the obligation of management to land and capital. The payments to land and capital must be made because they are the subjects of legal contracts and because security is normally pledged, at least for capital loans, and therefore the enterpriser would stand to lose greatly if he attempted to default on his interest payments. The contractual nature of the obligations to land and capital tends to forestall the possibility of exploitation of them by management. And since management in this case is prevented from exploiting those two factors, the only factor remaining to be exploited is labor. You see the antagonism built into the system. Workers of the world unite. Karl Mordecai Marx on the scene. And then it goes on and talks about the substitution of the factors. Let's see, we got 3 minutes. We've already discussed the possibility of overpayment of the factors, meaning a factor receiving a share in the distribution of the income which is greater than the value that the factor contributes to production. Where this discrepancy exists, one may normally expect management to attempt to substitute a cheaper factor of production for the expensive one. To the extent that it is possible to substitute factors of production for one another, therefore, they will be substituted to the end that the supply prices of the factors tend to equal the value of the product contributed by each of the factors. Now listen carefully. The most important of substitutions that could occur is the substitution of capital for labor. Historically, America has experienced a long run of scarcity of labor, and it continues. But it drops down to this, and it says the high level of wages has been a contributing cause for the substitution of machines for men. The substitution of machine for men means the substitution of capital for labor, since money capital is converted into buildings and machines. It's true, of course, that some amounts of other factors may be substituted for one another. It may be possible to be for capital be substituted for land in some cases. Thus, instead of increasing the average cultivation for potatoes, the crop of potatoes may be increased on the same acreage by using machinery in the planting, cultivation, and reaping of the harvest. Normally, we'd not expect the substitution of any of the other factors for management, since management controls the firm. And so you can see that a lot of the problems, a lot of the things that we have to deal with today are deeply rooted in this understanding of the principles of economics. And so we spend a little bit of time on that each day on this broadcast, more than I'd really like. However, this is the home of philosophical radicalism, and so very many of the radical philosophers of the past have focused on this very issue. This great debate, this great antagonism. And as we came out of mercantilism into this industrial revolution, and through the industrial revolution into the machine age, and now into this new global technocratic economic order, all of these conditions are still at force. They're still the same perennial questions. You'll be replaced by a machine one of these days. It'll be a chip or something else. Anyway, folks, we're flush out of time for today. Thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, good day.
One precinct, one county, one state at a time. You've been listening to Become Vocal Local.
Have you heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic Spark Plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower, and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic Spark Plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. Enginebrain.com. Enginebrain.com.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail and is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.